people and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, we've got the whole gang here today at Shift and Steer. And, everybody's accounted for and present. Yes, you.
I'm here.
You, young man in the back.
That's me. I'm
Matt. What's your name?
My name is
We're
Matt.
We're taking roll. And you over there on the phone, what's your name?
I'm Wilderness Aaron today.
Wilderness Aaron. Well, no, aren't you more back in the city today if you're at your dad's house?
Well, you'd think I'm on top of a mountain, so there's something rustling in the bushes, eating something. I haven't been able to figure out what it is. I got bees and bugs and squirrels
get your camera ready. Maybe it's Sasquatch. You know?
Hey, I'll have to send you some photos I've already taken. So
get out some Slim Jims and maybe you can grab Sasquatch.
No, that's Tahoe. Oh,
okay. So, hey, how you guys been?
Good.
Now, you were in Florida last week. Aaron and I had a great time. We were just we were hooting and hollering and having a great time. We talked about cars. Is that unusual or what?
It was the best show ever.
Good.
The reactions on last week's show were phenomenal. I had emails, and they were like, when's Matt coming back?
Yeah. Florida was fine.
See, that's how he is. That's how that guy is.
Florida was fine. Went out for a wedding.
Here, you're going to hear the phone ring.
Haven't been there in a long time. So I haven't really, experienced the car culture out there in a while. And it turns out that the car culture in Florida is it's pretty significant.
You mean they've gotten away from the glow, the underglow?
I mean, it used to be
street glow. That's what it's called.
Yeah, street glow. I couldn't tell you. I didn't drive around at night too much, but maybe every car out there has that now. Maybe it caught on.
All the Bentley Bottegas have street glow underneath.
Yeah, well, yeah. When I was out there, it was all Fox body Mustangs, baby. But now it's all like Bentley Bottegas. Everybody's rolling around in their fancy cars out there, even though it's in the rain.
Where you were in?
Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale. Okay.
Fort Lauderdale?
I know. It didn't come out right, did
Fort
it?
Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, sure.
Lauderdale.
Yeah.
So, third time's a charm.
So they have all the street glow so they can see the alligators crossing the road,
And now the snakes.
Yeah.
And now the snake has boa constrictors, anacondas.
Yep.
There's big trouble.
Well, when I lived there, they had that stuff, too. And street glow.
And street glow. And street glow. I forgot you lived there. That's why you like it so much.
Right.
Matt?
Anyway, I went there, and I turned around and came back. And the trip home is always, the trip home, there always something has to happen.
Would you have a middle seat between two big people?
No, but pretty close is, I flew, I flew Alaska, and Alaska has, coach, they have first class, and they have kind of like a business class. There's like two rows on the plane.
Most airlines have that. Yeah.
Not all of them, believe me. And
you're right, Southwest doesn't.
Southwest doesn't. They don't have anything. There's like two rows on the plane that are the exit rows, and there's like more leg rooms, like 4 inches more leg room, and you pay extra money, and it comes with your food and your drink and all that stuff. It's kind of like first class, but without sitting up front.
Yeah,
whatever. But they don't bring you steaks; they bring you snacks and whatever. So I was like, yeah, this is a great way to fly for 5+ hours. So I'll do that. So I flew out there; it was fine. On the way back. And it's priority boarding as well. They're like, first class passengers, come on in. And then like row 8,
first class passengers come in right now. Now the guys who want to feel like they're in first but didn't pay as much, come on in.
It's basically
now.
Like row 8, yeah. Right? So I get on the plane, and there's a couple other people, this other guy. Row 8 is right in front of the exit row with the extra room, the upgraded row.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was right in front of row 9.
Right. It is. And I'm like, oh, we all paid for the upgrade. We should be in those seats. And like, yeah, we had to switch planes at last minute. And now row 8
gets the benefit without paying for it.
Is the worst seat available because it's not reclining and it's the least amount of room.
Yeah.
And the guy, he's like, oh, I understand that. He goes, but I'm 6'4" and I paid for the upgrade. She's like, yeah, because of the seat chart, we can't switch seats. And we're like, oh. So
there's rules, Matt.
Everybody that was in row 9 got our upgraded seats for free, and we were jammed in the other seats, which, whatever, I'm okay with it, but nobody once came up to us and like, we just kept asking, like, how are we going to resolve this? Like, what are we going to do here? Like, and
we're going to let you stay on the plane. Shut your mouth.
And that's basically what they're doing. They're like, we can't do anything. We can't do anything. Sit down. Shut up. Stop being difficult. And then like somebody else came over and they're like, it's out of our hands. It's out of our hands. I was like, you guys just keep saying like, calm down. Don't do anything. I wasn't doing much.
Matt turned around and he got the whole plane going, Attica.
Right. The guy next to me was getting really kind of fired up. And people just kept coming up to him going, calm down, sir. You just take your seat. We can't do anything. He's like, really? And I don't know. The whole thing was kind of...
Did you end up tackling the dude, tying him up, and putting him in his seat?
Well, I mean, I asked the flight attendant. I asked the ticket people. I'm like, okay, so I'm in the seat. I get it. But I'm not paying for them to eat our food and drink our beers.
They're snickering. They're snickering at us.
Yeah, by the way. Nobody in row 9 was like...
They're like quiet,
yeah,
right?
Nobody in that row was like, hey, man, you know, we get it. You know, you guys paid for this. Let's switch seats, you know, once we're up in the air or something like that. That never happened, right? And the flight attendant's like, oh, the ticket guy came over. He goes, you know what, sir, talking to the other guy, he goes, you know, if you're really nice and apologize to the flight attendants, he's like, for what? Seat me in the wrong seat? He goes, if you apologize,
we'll give you a free cup of booze.
Yeah, she's like, you can have one drink, and we might move you to another seat if it's available. And we're like, I'm like, are seats available? Like, well, there's 30 seats available, including one right behind you in the
we're just being jerks.
Yeah, they're really being jerks about the whole thing. And needless to say, I'm pretty sure I still just paid for that and got nothing in return. And I was like, can I at least get a refund? Like, I'm not even saying give me a ticket. I'm like, just refund me the upgrade fee, right? Like, I get it. I'm fucked. Like, you know, refund me the fee. And they're like, you've got to call people. Like, not us. There's people. And then I called somebody when I landed, and they're like, I definitely understand. That shouldn't happen. I feel bad. However, we can't help you on Sunday. You got to call customer service again on Monday.
Dude, let me tell you, you use the power of the podcast, because you remember when I had that big to-do with my rental car?
Yeah.
I talked about it on this one, on Shift and Steer. I talked about it on Man Seeks Adventure. And you know what? I got a call from the people.
You did?
Yeah, they called me and they said, there's nothing we can do for you, but I got a call from them.
Look, I mean, just to make sure I'm not being a douche here, I'm just logging in on my phone to my bank account to see if there's some sort of refund.
They're not going to give you a refund.
There was nothing. There's nothing.
You got to make... Even if you make a big deal out of it, they don't care. That's the problem. They don't care. And you know what the problem is? Everybody complains anymore. There was a time when, you know, I don't know, everybody complains. But let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's talk about other stuff, because...
Don't go to Florida.
I want to talk about my experience at the burger joint down the street. And Aaron wants to talk about... He went to pottery painting the other night, and they didn't fire his pottery correctly. So...
No, I was going to say...
Were you all in Florida at the time? Because... Don't go there.
I just got a refund from the DMV from almost 2 years ago when they took – I sold a motorcycle in Nevada, and California said you owe us registration. And I said I sold the bike like 6 months before registration was due, and you just took the money out of my account. So it took almost 2 years, but DMV, California, actually refunded us the $137 that they took. Now I got to go after Wells Fargo for taking the $130 they took for a legal order. But yeah, I got a refund from the DMV. How about that?
That's amazing.
So Aaron's winning.
Yes. I know.
Now let's talk about the real reason that Matt was in Florida, because on two shows back, we talked about that F1's coming back to Miami, which has now been confirmed. And you were down there. You thought if you got down there early, you could get in line first, didn't you?
I'm not going.
To buy tickets. But after going down, you're not going back.
I'm not going back.
Not even if Alaska goes, listen, Matt, we can't give you a refund, but we're going to give you a flight to Florida, round trip.
I haven't been to Florida.
In row nine. Guarantee you get row nine.
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be row eight, but when they switch planes.
No, what's going to happen is they're going to give you row nine. Then you're going to have a normal plane, and you're going to be sitting behind the guys that are all sitting there relaxing.
Yeah, I'm not getting up. I'm not moving. I'm going to have your free drinks and food that you paid for.
If it would have been the other way around, you would have given up your seat and gone in the bad row, wouldn't you?
I absolutely would have.
Not.
I absolutely would have.
I would, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely totally. I would have.
Sure you would have. You would have been back there going...
Matt barely takes up one seat as it is. He could easily have switched with the six-foot guy.
That guy that was like 6'4", his argument made sense, and... He was making enough of a ruckus that there's no way the people that were sitting behind us didn't see what was going on. Absolutely, I would have.
Every time I fly with Rick, producer Rick here, I'm like, God, this seat's so uncomfortable. I'm thinking to myself, and then I look over at him, and he's 6'5", and he's like, he's got his knees under his chin, and he's like, I go, okay, it's not that bad. It's not that bad.
I fit in the seat. It wasn't, and nobody was sitting next to me. It was just like there were seats open, and they wouldn't let us move, even when we were in the air. And it wasn't about that. It was about, okay, I'm here now. That's fine. But I'm not going to pay for the upgrade, right? So let's figure that out.
Matt, come on. We're 11, 12 minutes in, and you're still complaining about your flight.
Let's talk about the Shelby.
Oh, my gosh. Aaron, did you hear what's happening?
No, I don't think so. I'm up in the mountains.
Oh, gosh. Matt's going to fill you in because Shelby's got big news.
Aaron, do you remember the Shelby Series 1? It was the car they came out in, like, 1999, and it had...
Kind of like a Panos?
A little.
Or one of the mid-'80s Jaguars that had their top cut off.
Yeah.
The Jelly Bean version.
Yeah. It had a 4-liter Oldsmobile V8 in it.
It was that Aurora motor.
Yeah, and I remember, like, it came out, and it was slow, and it didn't stop. And then there was, like, an upgrade you can buy. Like, as they were making new ones, they came with supercharger packages and big brakes. And then anybody that bought, like, the first few could pay. They're like, it only costs $20,000.
You could pay more if you wanted to have performance. Yeah.
If you want it to be fast. So they had, like, I don't know, like, Vortec or Paxton superchargers on these V8s, and they made like 460 horsepower. But so Shelby just announced that they're going to make a Shelby Series 2. What does that mean? That means they found, I guess.
I like how they find these. You know, it's like, wow. What's under those tarps over there?
They found like They found like four cars or unibodies, chassis, whatever you want to call them, that were never sold and never really fully built. And they're like, we're going to sell these, and they're going to do all custom leather interior and all that stuff. We're going to sell four of these, but instead of that terrible Aurora engine with made no power, Shelby wants to put in a 427 all aluminum big block, or you can get it with a small block Ford with a ZF 5-speed transaxle.
But so are we talking about a normally aspirated motor, like an old school 427?
Yes, that's what it sounds like. I mean, imagine some sort of fuel injection, whatever, but I don't know. It just seemed like the Shelby Series 1 was sort of the future of Shelby. You know, let's make a car that looks cool and futuristic. And I don't want to use the term supercar, but
no, it's far
definitely
from a supercar,
modern sports car. Why not go with the most technical
an overhead, you know, 32 valve motor, or yeah, you know, like you were saying, Coyote motor or something, because you want it to be with the line. I mean, that car, I never liked it. I'll just say it. I never liked it. And when I see them go through at auction, I always think, oh, my God, who's going to buy that thing? You know?
Somebody does. Somebody.
There's always some guy who wants it.
I mean, it's kind of weird. And I get they're only making four, and it's a weird comeback thing. And certainly for Shelby purists, it could be a cool car to get. I imagine if you get one of the four. By the way, these cars sold for, I don't know, $150,000, $160,000 back in the day. I think this is going to be like $325,000,
$350,000. Oh, a bargain.
That's crazy. It's the same styling, you know, dated styling. It's like the PT Cruiser and the Plymouth Prowler. And to me, it's like kind of in that genre of design, you know?
Now that you brought it up, they're also doing a PT Cruiser with a 427. They're going to do 20 of those.
I think these had carbon fiber bodies on them. So I think, yes, I think a big portion of that would be,
in a convertible?
Yeah, it only comes in a convertible.
They only come in a convertible. You know, it's like, but, I mean, Matt, I had shared with you.
So there must be some chassis underneath with the carbon fiber body on it. And I don't know if it's aluminum chassis or...
If you remember, I told you that my Bonneville Watch Company, we did the limited edition watches because at the time, we were doing the CSX watches, where if someone had a CSX, had a Shelby that was in the registry, any of their Cobras or any of the 427 or 289 cars, they could call up and order a watch that we had a carbon fiber dial on, and it had Carroll Shelby's signature, and we would engrave the CSX number on the rotor on the back, and we would put it in a registry. And so they called us and they said, hey, could you also do the Series 1 that we're coming out with? And so we did a carbon fiber dial. We did the Series 1 logo and everything. And I think we sold five of them. Maybe that's why I don't like the car.
You know, to be clear, it sounds like there's...
Well, we love Shelby.
Oh, yeah. Look, to be clear, it sounds like there's another company involved called Wingard Motorsports, and they bought all the remaining cars that weren't sold or something.
So then it's not even a Shelby.
Well, I'm sure they're doing this with Shelby because it was announced at some Shelby event. Look, I'm not opposed to it. Like, it's cool. Bring it back. It's a carbon fiber body. But I was just kind of thinking, why go with the 427? I know it's supposed to be like, oh, because, you know, this was supposed to be the new Cobra. The Shelby Series 1 was supposed to be like the new Cobra. And it has kind of that oval-shaped mouth in the front. But I'm sure they couldn't get the Cobra name. They couldn't get the names and the trademarks and all the stuff that they needed to do. So they came up with Shelby Series 1. But why not do, like you said, like a Coyote engine? You could open the Ford catalog and get one of the 5.2-liter Illuminator engines, and that's like a 580-horsepower naturally aspirated engine. That would be badass. Like, let's do something like that in there. And you could just get it right out of the Ford Motorsport catalog.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if these were like development cars that were just sitting around or something. And
they're supposed to be pretty light because the idea of the Shelby Series 1 was the carbon fiber body, pretty lightweight. It weighed less than 2,900 pounds.
I wonder who designed that car.
Something pounds.
Do you have any idea who designed that car?
I don't know. I don't.
You know, because it was not one of those cars that was ever lauded as, like, you know, designed or penned by so-and-so. You know, it was a lot of times you'll hear that. And I don't remember. Maybe the...
Yeah.
So, well, it's interesting. You know,
well, so that was part of their announcements. And then I think they were going to do, like... a 67 Shelby continuation car. Mustang. Huh.
Whatever happened to the guys in Huntington Beach that were all former employees of Shelby in the original days that were doing those that were building down to the nut and bolt 67?
Peter Brock was.
Yeah, Peter was part of that.
He was part of, he was involved with that. I'm not exactly sure what it was.
They announced it like at SEMA last year.
Yeah.
And they had the first car, and it was down to the nut and bolt. And I wonder whatever happened to that.
I don't know.
We should do a follow-up and find out.
We should find out from Peter Brock.
Yeah.
So Shelby is doing a continuation car, if you will, of a 67 GT500. And
I heard they're putting an LS motor in it.
It is a 427 cubic inch racing motor. You know, it's going to have disc brakes and traction bars and, you know, some sort of locking differential, and it's, you know, it's going to
Who's building that?
I'm assuming that Shelby American is doing it.
Oh, that's what I was wondering, if they are, if they're licensing it off to somebody. Because there is some other
cars. They're going to do 10 cars, yeah. Shelby American is going to do 10 continuation cars. This one looks pretty cool, and this one should have that engine in it, right? I just think the Shelby
Series. Let me see a picture of it, because I think I read something else about this, and I think it is being licensed off. Who are the guys that make all the hot rod Mustangs, like GT something or other? Dan Kahn actually represents them, I think.
Yeah, classic.
I think they're the ones I read are making those for Shelby.
Yeah, but I don't know that they're doing this car.
Mustang too. In Missouri, that there's Gateway Mustangs that they're doing those.
Yeah, but
they're not the licensed one. No.
Yeah, no, this was a different one where I read that those guys
Classic Recreations.
Classic Recreations.
So
had
Classic
announced
Recreations.
Oh, okay.
They're doing that. Huh. Classic Recreations has the license to do the Shelby Recreations, but this one I don't know is coming from them. This one might. These are only 10 cars being made. And I think they're coming from Shelby American.
You know,
Classic Recreations is a licensing deal. And then Fusion Motors out here in wherever, Calabasas or somewhere in the valley, wherever they make porn, they have the official license for the Eleanor cars now.
Ooh, because we need more Eleanor cars on the planet. Because there's just not enough of them at every auction
but
we go to.
Theirs are built pretty well. Everyone previously built.
I don't even care if they're like built well. I get
that
so
hack
sick.
Shop in Texas that went out of business and scammed everybody.
God, those guys were something else. But the thing is I see these guys spend big money on these Eleanor Mustangs. I mean, big money.
Yeah, $250,000.
Yeah, and I go, what are you thinking about? I mean, yeah, I'm going to spend $250,000 to have a car just like Tom over there who bought one 15 minutes ago. I just doesn't make any sense to me. Doesn't make any sense. Why do they? I mean, don't you know that somebody's going to steal that car? I mean, it's going to be gone in 60 seconds.
Oh, yeah, well.
Yeah.
I enjoy the movie. It is a guilty pleasure of mine, and the car is badass. And
it's great in the movie.
And it sounds right in the movie.
But do we need 100,000 of them on the planet?
Well, they're never going to sell that many.
Sold that many already. No. I mean, you see them everywhere. At every car show, there's two or three. And at every Barrett Jackson auction, there's two or three for sale. And
Those aren't the licensed ones. Totally. Every once in a while, you get the one licensed one up there.
Do you think Nick Cage has one? Oh, no, he sold everything.
Yeah. Does he have cars left?
No. I just watched a documentary on him the other night. And
there's already a documentary about him having no money?
There's already one on Johnny Depp not having any money. And how they're
but
you know what? I got to say, Nicolas Cage, I respect you, dude, because he blew all his money. He made a fortune. But you know what? Everybody's making fun of him for doing all these direct-to-videos and stuff. But he had to sell everything, and he still had a $14 million tax bill. And they said that it is down to like $4 million, and he's almost ready to start banking money again. And he's been living in a condo in Vegas. He sold everything.
Yeah.
You know, here's a guy. He didn't have one castle. He had two castles. He had 14 homes. They were showing it. He had, you know, two private jets. He had a yacht.
He pay his taxes?
He had a 190-foot yacht.
Nice.
Here. And he had a 180-foot yacht there. He had to have one on, you know, in Europe and here.
Well,
and,
of course.
Yeah.
You know what it costs to bring a boat over there?
And no, it was just ridiculous. They were showing that at one point his financial guys sat him down and goes, man, you're going broke. You're not making enough. He goes, what do you mean? I made $50 million this year. And they're like, no, you're not making enough because your net right now is like $2 million a month just to service every, you know, to pay for the houses and the people and the, you know, your yachts each have staff of nine, you know. And
Aaron, what's your
crazy
monthly nut? Is it $2
million? His nut is like,
I still pay child support, so it's like next to nothing.
Yours is pine nuts, right? Where they fall off the tree?
Yeah.
No, but
I got a whole front yard full of pine cones, man. I am rich in pine cones.
But then the one on Johnny Depp was even worse. That guy, he said And this was like just going back 6 months. He had a $30,000 a month tab for wine.
For wine.
And they said his nut was like, it was like $1 million a week or something like that. It was just these guys. I mean, it gets so crazy. I mean, I couldn't imagine that. I mean, I stress over my nut being, you know, like $500.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know what? When you've got an army of people just writing your checks, you know there's a problem. Yeah. You know.
So where are the Nicolas Cage cars? Are we going to buy some?
Well, some of them are at the Peterson Museum. That one that we built at Boyd's, that purple Vicky.
The purple, yeah.
That car is at the Peterson Museum. Well, or did the Peterson sell it?
I think
they might have sold it when they liquidated a bunch of cars. But the poor guy, I mean, you feel kind of sorry for him. I know he blew a bunch of money and everything, but when he hit bottom, it was in 2008.
I mean, yeah.
It's like, yeah, that house you paid $25 million for, we can get about $500,000 for it right now, you know?
All right, so are you going to buy a Shelby continuation car, Brad?
I'm talking
to make 10.
Dude, I'm talking them down because I want to corner the market on them.
Okay. So
no, I'm not. My financial advisor told me he doesn't want me to end up like Nicolas Cage. So no, I'm not going to buy one. But you know what I do want to talk about today?
I don't know. Tell me.
You know, we're talking about auto manufacturers and Shelby and all that. And I
want to talk about turtle wax?
Turtle wax?
Yes.
You know what? All these cars and those Shelby continuations probably do have to be maintained. And you know what? You're absolutely right. It'd be a good time to tell you about turtle wax. Because the automotive world has seen major changes since turtle wax invented the world's first liquid car polish back in 1941. But as the saying goes, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And the things that threaten the look, feel, and smell of your car are as consistent as ever. That's why Turtle Wax has spent the past 77 years developing the most revolutionary products in car care, like their Power Outline, featuring advanced technology that destroys stains and odors at the molecular level. Turtle Wax Power Out products are designed to clean, shine, and protect your interior from whatever messes the world throws at it. Their dedication to innovation is so great, Turtle Wax is getting recognition in unprecedented categories. Over 40,000 consumers voted Power Out, Carpet, and Mats Cleaner the 2018 Product of the Year in the Pet Care category. While awards look nice on mom's mantle, what matters most to Turtle Wax is how much car enthusiasts worldwide trust their products. Turtle Wax continues formulating breakthrough technologies to help you keep your car looking, feeling, and smelling fresh. Turtle Wax, trusted innovation inside and out.
I like it.
Yeah. We're getting that down, man. Turtle Wax.
I need some of that. I'm going to use some of that because I'm driving my M3. With the supercharger.
Did you finally get your car back?
Well, sort of. I got to take it back, but
because you've been driving that stolen BMW for months.
Here's the thing about car shops. If you're doing some mechanical work on the car and doing whatever.
Did you say chop shops? Or
car shops.
Oh, car shops, okay.
Why did that kind of come back so dirty? Like, there's metal shavings on the carpets, on the floors.
Dude, if you're going to a good place, they would be cleaning that before you picked it up. Hey, Aaron, you haven't been down here, but Matt has been driving this BMW for the past month and a half that we determined it's probably stolen, and that's why the guy was letting him drive it while his car was in the shop. And I said, dude, you're going to get pulled over one of these days. And he goes, trust me, I think about it every time a cop's behind me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I got the car back. It's running pretty strong.
Will it burn rubber?
It does because I still have the old tires from 15 years ago on there. And
so they're hard.
Yeah.
Don't stick.
But we're doing the photo shoot next week with, sorry, Brad, with HRE wheels. So we're doing the new wheels and tires on that thing and shooting some photos of it, the front bumper cover. I got another one that's out to paint right now. And
wait a minute. Why would they be doing a photo shoot of that?
Because they're bringing back their old 540
classic. Oh, so they need
design.
An old
They need a
car.
Retro car. Yeah,
retro. That's a nice way of saying it.
They need something from way back in 2001.
Something. Are you going to wear your white linen jacket and maybe some neon?
I'm going to bring that to the Radmobile thing. What's the show?
Yes. I agree.
Hey, now.
Radwood.
Hey, now.
Radwood.
In Matt's defense, I spent the day tuning mine because I'm taking it to the track on Thursday. So
you're what?
Hey, Matt, I hear you.
He's got an E46
as
well.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
Yes. So Brad, basically what we're saying is you better get on the bandwagon because these things are cheap right now and you can get some miles on them. And if they've been taken care of, you've got a hell of a bargain for it.
I don't need one of those. I have a 560 SEC Mercedes that is
you
slammed
say that.
Down.
We've never seen it.
And ready to go.
We've never seen it.
Yeah. Well, that's because, you know, you've never been to Mikasa.
I'm afraid your neighbors are going to yell at me.
Who's that guy with the loud car?
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of cars, let's get into the meat of this.
On the topic of your Mercedes, are you going to bring that to the next Radwood?
I told you, I'm bringing it to Radwood. We're all going to show up in our 80s mobiles.
Okay.
Yeah.
E46 is not from the 80s.
You got to find something else.
80s and 90s. Who's got to find something else?
Okay.
Aaron, what do you got?
What year is yours?
Mine's an 05.
Oh, then you're
what do you
have
got
to buy
from the 80s
else?
Or 90s?
Right. So,
what do you have?
What do you own that's from the 80s or 90s?
Oh, wait, nothing.
Okay, we're going to put you on a mission.
Just his wife.
You have to buy a 318 BMW convertible, and we want you to show up with, like, your sweater tied around your neck.
Yeah.
Khaki slacks. You know, the whole deal, dude.
Oh, man.
All and, he's got from the 80s
hey,
is Misha.
Hey, what? How about if I find a decrepit Mondial? I could do that. That would be even worse.
You know what? Even Mondials are too expensive nowadays. I mean, you know, they've come back down. But God, it's
all right. What else you got, Brad?
A car from that era. I think I would get an old 308 GT4. I used to the little Dino GT4s. Those were pretty cool. And those were late 70s, right? Or
and those 80s, were something you could pick up for 20 grand back in the day. But now, even those have gone up.
No, those are 40.
Because there's
50,
a bunch of guys that when the Ferraris went crazy stupid, they paid way too much for those Mondials and those Dinos. And now they're buried in them, so they don't want to let them go. Hey,
I'll get a Maserati Biturbo. There you go.
There you go. That,
now, there's a car you could find if it's
super
running.
Cheap.
If it's running.
Yeah.
You know what else? I just the other day I ran across it was in a parking lot and I was like, holy crap, those cars were so expensive. Those VW Phaetons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those were like 100 grand.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Phaeton.
Yeah. And now there's one. This thing was beautiful. It was in great shape. It had like the little sign on the window said less than 40,000 miles, all service records. And this thing was like $20,000 or something. I was like, wow.
Yeah. Did you buy it?
No. I don't want a VW Phaeton.
Really?
The little Lotus Elan, those were good looking little cars too, but they were junk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one from the
yes.
80s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they look good. Put an LS in it.
You're not going to believe this, Aaron, but I had one.
Oh, really?
You had one of those?
Yeah.
You know what? You're a little car kind of guy. Did you ever have a Miata?
Yes.
That doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise
me. For a couple of months. Somebody gave it to me.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me either. So, hey, do you guys know
a Monster Miata?
I didn't have a Monster Miata. No, I had a normal Miata.
I would take a Monster Miata to the track. That would be my track car. That's a pretty little track car.
How about, what were those Pontiacs, the little Pontiacs that you could
the
order
Solstice.
With the LS
Fiero.
Oh, did they make a Solstice?
They made a Solstice, the little one, with a very limited amount of them with LS motors.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they are.
Whoa.
They're scary fast. They're really
every time
cool.
You say Solstice now, I think of Ken Lingenfelder because he bought the Transformers one at Barrett Jackson. He didn't even know what it was. He bought it because he thought it was cute or something.
And then he thought
the kids at – you know, because he gives tours. He does charity tours of his collection.
And
for
they
all the
dig
kids.
It because it was.
And they love the Transformer car. So he paid like 11 grand or something. He's like, I just got a Transformers car.
Hey, did you guys.
Is a good looking little car.
Do you guys realize that, speaking of car companies, that basically 14 car companies control 54 of the top brands in the world?
I didn't know the exact numbers, but well, I assumed yes.
That's why I gave you this chart, Matt, so we could discuss it. I mean, well, we're talking about BMW. I mean, BMW Group owns Mini, BMW, and Rolls-Royce. That's pretty well known. And, you know, Tata that owns Tata Motors, Land Rover, and Jaguar, they bought them a few years back.
Those we know. Some of the surprising ones are like GM that owns foreign brands.
Biogen?
Yeah, I don't know what that
and
is.
And Wulang Motors.
And what is this, Buick? Except some sort of foreign
brand. Yeah, what's a Buick?
Buick?
Opel. Cadillac. Well, how about this one?
They own Vauxhall and Holden. And
I know Vauxhall. I mean, I knew they owned a Holden. But then you look at, like, Toyota. They have Daihatsu, Lexus, and Toyota. Okay, yeah, we knew that. But think of Ford. Ford had so many brands in the past, and now it's just Lincoln and Ford.
Yeah. So Renault, I know the car, the Renault, but it says they own Samsung. But as
Samsung Motors.
As a car brand? Is it the same?
Yeah. You've never heard of Samsung Motors? They made a lot. You know those little trucks that you see in Asia a lot that look like a glorified golf cart?
I don't go there.
The little cabs, that's you know, and Samsung does a lot of industrial equipment and things like that.
Maybe I'm missing that for some reason. I don't know why I don't.
Huh. Well, how about Fiat Chrysler? I mean, they really, I mean, you know, you've got Lancia, Maserati, Alfa Romeo, Dodge, Ram trucks, Jeep, Chrysler. Now, that's interesting to me because I never saw Ram as a separate brand before.
It is. Yeah, it has been for the past few years.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But
and there's actually trucks, you just see Ram.
There's talk of spinning Jeep off as a, I know it's a brand, but they might spin it off as a company, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So, it says that Toyota has Daihatsu, Lexus, and Toyota, but I'm pretty sure they own the Hino trucks as well. Maybe. Who keeps calling?
I don't know. These, you know, people that have my phone number. What the heck? Well, you know what's surprising is you look at the proliferation of Volkswagen.
Yeah, Volkswagen, for some reason, I'm very familiar with the cars that they own.
Except for a couple of these, like Skoda and Cert, which sound like vodka brands.
Yeah, they do.
Skoda is Czech. Skoda's from the Czech Republic.
Okay, it sounds like a Czech vodka brand.
Yeah.
Drink Skoda, you know, tonight. Hey,
I know something. Raise my hand. I know something.
There you go.
Aaron's got information. You, sir, in the back.
I've got information.
But you guys, you know how, you know, car brands, they come, they go, and I thought we could talk a little bit today about some of the brands that are no longer with us. Like Studebaker.
Sadly.
Have you ever had a Studebaker, Aaron?
Of course. I've had a few.
I kind of thought you might had.
I don't see a Ferrari
on
your list.
I like quirky stuff.
It's not because it's an independent brand. It's just the only one. They don't own anything else but Ferrari.
Okay, so when this chart says 14 car companies control the combined 54 brands.
Control 54 of the brands. Control a combined 54 brands.
So but these aren't all the brands.
No, it's not all the brands in the world. But I mean, most of the major ones, with the exception of Ferrari, are on there. Because Lamborghini's part of Volkswagen. And, you know, Bugatti's part of Volkswagen. Bentley. Porsche. I mean, those Volkswagen guys, they own all the big brand, all the big luxury brands. Because a lot of people don't realize that those Bugattis, they're basically just kit cars because they're just on the pan of an old VW.
I went to an event last week and
Type 3.
Saw the Bugatti Chiron. Mm-hmm. I think it's called the Chiron. It's a good-looking car.
It is a good-looking
car. It looks a lot better than a Veyron.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. I think the Veyron is weird.
It's weird?
Yeah, it's like a little weird. And it's smaller when you see it. And it's, I don't know, like, it looks cool. I like it because it's a supercar that's not just wings and vents everywhere. Like, I like that it's kind of,
yeah,
you know, but but it's not super attractive in that sense. And the Charon is still an extension of that, but I think the design looks better, and I think the whole, like, sort of scoop C thing on the side is cool. And in person, it looks good.
I don't like the headlights, though. I can't stand those headlights. And Porsche's new headlights, too, with the four LEDs. I can't stand those either.
I'm not a really big fan of the four LEDs in there either. It's kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. It's like, hey, you know, let's tape four flashlights together and put them underneath the cover.
It kind of looks that way.
Yeah.
And I think Porsche realized that. So, you know, for some modest amount of money, like $2,400, they'll make them black.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. They'll black them out.
And that way you don't notice them as much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they should put a big round reflector over them, and then it just look like one.
That's what they should do.
So, hey, anyways, Aaron had a Studebaker. What did you have?
I had the old trucks. I've had a couple 50s trucks of those, and they were pretty cool. They had a kind of a clutchless system to where you'd start. It had like a half gear overdrive, so you would basically let off the gas and then shift gears without the clutch in.
Oh, really?
They were really, really cool. Yeah, they're really, really unique.
Well, I mean, Studebaker was always known.
What they're called.
Yeah, they were always known to be innovative and forward thinkers, and you think of the Studebaker Hawk and the Golden Hawk and all those. I mean, I didn't realize they were founded in 1852. There's some old schools. But they were killed off in 66. Their biggest year was 1950. They sold 321,000 cars. And their lowest year was 53, which is interesting because you think they took till 66. They must have gone back up again. But do you know what killed them?
The Japanese?
No. Good guess, though. It was
when
Ford and General Motors started going into price wars. They just couldn't keep up with it. They weren't as big, and they were outpriced by Ford and GM, and people opted for those cars, and they just finally had to shutter and shut down. Not like Oldsmobile.
Do you think our buddy Alex Exidius knows the founder of Studebaker?
He might.
He might, yeah.
Because Alex has got to be like 140 now. That guy keeps on ticking.
He does. He keeps moving. How about Oldsmobile?
112, okay.
How about Oldsmobile, Aaron? You ever owned an Oldsmobile? They were founded in 1897.
I never have had an Oldsmobile. But I like the Tornado, right? Well,
Old Tornado. Yeah.
Those are pretty cool. And when you lower those things with the, you know, big old Bond speed wheels on them, you know, they look badass.
That's right. I mean, well, they were once known as a performance brand. I mean, Oldsmobile was like in the early days, they were known like exotic high performance, you know, when you're back in the 20s and stuff like that. But what happened was GM took them over, and basically what kind of, when you look on Wikipedia and like that, they say that it was just because they took this brand and just started putting it on everything in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And when you think of the 90s, can you think of anything Oldsmobile that you really would want? No.
No.
Nothing. And that just killed them. So in 2004.
I wanted my dad's Oldsmobile.
What's that? You wanted your dad's Oldsmobile?
That's what the commercials told me.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't your dad's Oldsmobile. So in 2004, they closed down. Not like Packard. Yeah.
So this is basically a big list of car companies that aren't around anymore.
Yeah, it is. It's like Tucker is amazing.
Short run.
Rob Ida, you know, we talk about these. Yeah, well, you talk about like Oldsmobile. In 1985, they sold 1.17 million cars. And then you look down at Preston Tucker. He was from 44 to 50. Oh, he only put cars out in 1950, though. He had 15 years of R&D. How many cars do you think he built, Aaron?
Oh, the Tuckers?
Yeah.
Shit, is there? There's like less than a dozen, isn't there?
He built 51.
He built 50 cars and one prototype.
Okay, 50 cars.
That's what
I said. Less than 100. Oh, that's crazy.
And in 1950, it was the car of the year.
Yeah, because it's awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
but
innovative. Yeah.
Yeah, and that guy just got put down by the big people who, you know, tried to pull that whole thing. If you watch the film about, that he was cheating the shareholders, and no, the bigger car companies just shut him down.
Is he was pushed down by Oldsmobile, Pontiac, and Mercury,
all and brands, DeSoto and DeSoto, Plymouth and Mercury, yeah,
and all brands that are no longer around.
What do you want to know about Aaron? Which one interests you?
The Kaiser.
I want to know about I want to know about the Hummers, because the Hummers, I mean, you still see them everywhere. It's like they made so many of those things.
They
Why
didn't,
did they
though.
Close that company down?
They didn't
they
make
didn't,
that many
they
of
just,
them.
They're everywhere.
They must still well, you know, just on, be on the road.
In California. Yeah, in California, they're everywhere. Maybe everywhere else in the world, they're not.
Because in 06 was their biggest year of production ever.
Hold on, let me guess.
Go ahead.
18,000.
Now you're way off.
What? Yeah.
What do you think, Aaron? Because you think they're everywhere.
Yeah, I want to say it's in the millions. I want to say it's in the millions, but I'm going to be realistic and say 300,000.
No,
you're as far off in the other direction as Matt is.
Wow.
06 was their biggest year. They did 72,000 vehicles.
Oh my God, that I am blown.
Their lowest year was 08 when they finally killed it, and it was 27,000. But do you remember, Matt, how if you wanted to be a Hummer dealer and you already had your GMC dealership and all that, they made you build a separate building, and it was really extravagant.
Yeah.
And then it was like 2 years later, they go, yeah, we're getting doing away with it. You know, sorry, we made you build that $5 million building over there.
Yeah.
It's only a Hummer building, but, you're kind of screwed.
That's absolutely true. A friend of mine had a Hummer dealership, and it was. It was separate. It was this metal and glass building. It was all modern and cool, and it was. It was a completely separate building, and I think they had four cars in it. That's all
yeah,
that fit in that
it was crazy.
Tiny building.
Basically,
it was really,
the fuel economy, you know, when gas started getting expensive there for a while, and the economy in general, nobody could go. You know, when everything was going to hell, they couldn't get financed on some ridiculously priced Humvee. I mean, if you remember, everybody was selling off their SUVs.
But then there was like the weird hipsters.
It was a Chevy Avalanche.
Yeah, but then there was like the weird hipsters that would like, I don't know, like stab the tires of Hummers on a lot.
Oh, and light them on fire.
And throw paint on them.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? That's so stupid.
It's dumb. It's a Chevy Avalanche. Why don't you kill the Chevy Avalanche out there? They're the same damn vehicle.
Well, the big ones
had a bad rap.
The big ones were just on the same chassis as like my 3/4 ton Yukon. You know, it's. But
yeah, exactly.
What about DeLorean?
Yeah.
How about the DeLorean, you guys?
Yeah, that car sucks.
I mean, you look back at John DeLorean. Here's a guy who he penned the original GTO, the Trans Am that was made famous in Smokey and the Bandit. He penned that.
Yeah.
He did those Grand Prix in the 70s that were, you know, pretty cool looking cars. And you know what else he penned? The Vega.
Oh.
Which, you know what? Say what you will. Vegas were good-looking cars.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're right. Say what you will.
You know that I have a soft spot.
I know you do.
I always look at mine and I say, it looks like a little mini Camaro.
Yeah.
And
it's a Camaro that hasn't grown up yet.
It's a mini-me. It's a mini-me Camaro.
The Camaro that never hit puberty.
Yeah.
Okay, Aaron, what do you think? 1980. Now, that company was from 75 to 82, which surprises me. I didn't realize it was around that long. But
well, you know, you'd have to do the math on this because they made enough parts that they're still making them.
Right,
believe,
that place
right?
in Texas, yes.
But I think they made less than 50,000 cars.
What do you think, Aaron? I mean, Matt?
14,000.
Okay, well, 1981,
that
1981 was their largest year of production with a whopping 9,200 cars.
Yeah.
I was getting close. That coming.
Yep. And
I was so stuck on this game show.
And their lowest year of production was 1982, the year they closed. All they made was 1,000 cars. And I'll bet you they fudged on that. It was probably 882 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just call it 1,000.
Yeah.
John, you know, John's going through all that stuff where, he's selling cocaine or something. And
they didn't sell 1,000 probably. They're like, that was the minimum they needed to make with their vendors.
Now, John DeLorean, he went through that whole thing. That's what killed the company, was his whole links to selling cocaine, in which he was.
But he was kind of a hot rod. He was a playboy. He was kind of an ego.
Yeah.
He was kind of,
He was totally, he was the poster child for Playboy. Yeah, he was, the cocktail in one hand and the cigarette in the other and, madman. He was like one of the madman guys.
He was mad.
Let's do one more before we wrap this show up. You guys, have you ever heard the expression that that's going to sell like an Edsel?
No.
Have you ever heard the expression of that, that's just another Edsel? You haven't heard that?
No.
Wow.
No, because we're still alive.
I guess being just 3 years older than you guys, there was that much of a change. And no, there for many, many years, I've never really heard it used, but I did know about it that, that's like an Edsel, meaning that
it's but you were alive when the Edsel was out.
No, I wasn't. Edsel, from 1957. Now think about this. This is a car that was...
I knew it was 57. I was just trying to get you to I wasn't alive.
Now, 57. Think of this. Think of this. Everybody knows an Edsel.
I remember when they came out.
Everybody knows an Edsel. They were only around from 57 to 59. I mean, years before any of us were even born. And it's like you could say to somebody, the Edsel? And they're like, oh, yeah. And it's like it was such short-lived. And
not enough parents name their kids Edsel anymore.
I know. They don't, do they? their largest year was 58. Basically, to put it in perspective for you guys, 58 would have been the mid-years of the Edsel, okay?
Yeah, the mid-year. That's all they had is the 1 year.
Now get this, though. It wasn't successful, but in 1958, it sold 63,000 cars. Now, compare that to the Hummer, which sold 72,000. I mean, or DeLorean, who sold 9,200. 63,000. Oh. And... their lowest year was 59, the last year of business, and they sold 45,000. And now do you know that car cost Ford billions of dollars? Now think about billions of dollars today versus billions of dollars back in the 50s.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's huge.
And do you know any of the history on it, Matt?
No.
Do you, Aaron, know why it was a flop?
No. No, I have no idea.
They
again,
basically
it's a very familiar name. I thought they were around a lot longer.
Yeah, and it's basically what they kind of attribute it to is the fact that Edsel was overhyped. They made such a big deal leading up to it. People thought it was going to be so futuristic. They almost thought it was going to be practically one lug nut short of being a flying car. And when they went to see it, they were like, underwhelmed, even though it was a fantastic car, had all these innovative things.
You mean like the movie Valerian?
Well, you know what makes me think of the Segway.
Yeah,
remember how the Segway
totally
was?
Right.
Oh my God, this is something that's going to. They won't tell us what it is yet, but it's every morning show, and we're going to debut it here first. And it came out, and the guy's on this little scooter, and everybody's like, wah, wah, wah. You know, it was like, what?
Yeah, you're like, hey, it's an Oreo popsicle.
Yeah, it just was not anything. So they sucked it up. They threw away all the tooling and just took a huge loss and killed the company. I mean, that was quick. I mean, 50 said they didn't give it any chance. It was like...
Or maybe just a really smart business decision that didn't let it drag on and lose money for people for a century.
Well, it already cost them billions.
Cost who?
What was Edsel? Thinking about them I mean, were they innovative back then? I can't say I've ever even seen one in person. Was there anything special about them in their production that the hype was all about?
They used a lot of innovative tooling to make the car and get it in different shapes that weren't being used. Because if you think in those years, you know, everything was kind of slab-sided, and they were using things that was more formed and rolled, and the interiors were phenomenal, had a lot of, extra accompaniments that weren't common back then. And, they had Bluetooth back then, Aaron. They were the first car to have Bluetooth. And, no one else, they were actually the first car to use a Coyote motor. A lot of people don't know that.
You know, every Edsel should
carbon
have.
Carbon ceramic brakes, you know.
Carbon fiber.
Every.
Carbon trauma.
Every Edsel should have come with a Brush Hero.
It should have. They, you know what?
Hero, yeah. A Brush Hero, because it's our
then
new
they
favorite must
they'd
have.
They'd still be in business.
You probably saw these guys on the Shark Tank.
We could use one of those to clean our BMW wheels. Huh?
Oh, I'm telling you, yes.
I saw them on CNN the other morning.
Did you?
Yes.
Did they call you out by name?
No, they didn't. They called Aaron out. They said, Aaron, whenever we talk about grime, we're talking about your cars. Get a Brush
it's
Hero.
Muck, remember? It's
muck. Yes.
Yeah, Brush
like,
Hero.
No.
Brush Hero is a watered power cleaning machine designed for fast, fun, expert-level car and bike detailing. By the way, you can use this stuff on your barbecue, on your lawn furniture.
Your dog.
Probably on your dog. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But it works great on rims, wheel spokes, grills, or your gnarly engine bay. This saves time, saves backache, saves you from wet, scraped-up knuckles. There's no batteries or electricity. Brush Hero is impressively powerful. It's completely water-powered. You guys should definitely check this out. This is the ultimate detailing tool, a must-have for every car lover, motorcyclist, or all-around clean freak. Right now, you can use code SHIFT for 10% off your entire order at brushhero.com. So go to brushhero.com, use the promo code SHIFT, S-H-I-F-T, for 10% off your entire order. And if you go on there and you buy the package, maybe some of the accessories, anything over $40 ships for free. So
what
check
a deal.
That out, brushhero.com.
Make sure you use SHIFT, man. That shows that you're listening to our show, and it helps us out a bunch.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you guys a couple more. I know you want to go, Matt, but I got a couple more here for you. Pontiac. Everybody knows Pontiac. Pontiac.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha.
Started in 1926.
Yeah.
It died in 2010. And do you guys remember when Pontiac was announced that it was going to go away? I mean, it was a big deal. People were like, no, you gotta kill Buick, keep Pontiac. I mean, there were people protesting and it was.
But Pontiac and Mercury were the ones that were all like on my radar. Those were both, you know, around the same time. And I was like, wow, really?
I know.
They got some legacy there.
Well, you grew up with them. That's why you knew them, you know. And,
it's one of those.
Aaron?
I think the Aztec killed Pontiac.
It was your favorite car ever?
There's one in the Peterson Museum.
I wasn't a big Pontiac fan like most. I liked that little Solstice, the GXB. I would still buy one of those.
Yeah, well, we talked about them earlier, especially with the LS motor in them. Well, let's talk about the Aztec for a minute, because
Pontiac was a big blow to us because Pontiac had some cool cars.
Yes,
you know
the Trans Am and the GTO and even that GTO that Holden they were bringing in recently with the LS in it and everything
didn't sell well, but cool sleeper.
And they had the Grand Prix.
Yep,
right? They had the Grand Prix.
Do you guys remember the whole wide track, the Pontiac wide track?
No.
In the 60s, their whole thing was they had a wider track than everybody else, and it made the cars handle better.
Yeah.
They never thought about putting stiffer springs on them. But if you look back at the old drawings, they literally had the artists when they used to do the really cool watercolors and oil paintings, and they would paint them wider than they actually were to reinforce that whole wide track image. And I remember reading about how the artists were told, no, just a little wider lens. They go, well, that's not what the car looks like. Don't worry about it. It's wide track, you know?
It's wide track. We gotcha.
And the, I mean, Pontiac Trans Am, all that, and it's gone. The 70s and the 80s, they were the performance brand. And in 73 was their biggest year. They sold just under a million cars. And by 1990, they were down to 642,000 cars. And it just, you know, it just started dwindling from there. I think GM had too many brands.
Yeah,
and they were eating their self, you know, because it was they were competing against themselves. But I want to talk about one other brand before we go, because it surprised me. AMC, American Motor Company.
Yeah.
So that's a Matador. And Gremlin and the Pacer.
Yeah.
And what's amazing.
And Jeep originally, right?
No, Jeep bought them, actually. They
Oh, okay. Because they made all the mail trucks back in the day, too.
Exactly. Now, here's what really surprised me about American Motors is the fact that they were born in 1954. What year do you think they quit making AMCs? This is going to surprise you.
Yeah, not on my radar. So I don't know.
They had the 70s. Eagle in the 80s, right? In the late 80s, was the AMC Eagle? With the
I forgot about that. The four wheel drive that was car. Yeah, the station wagon.
So,
it was an AMC. Yeah,
90 maybe.
88,
yeah, like 89, 90.
88. 88.
Okay. There you go.
I mean, that just I forgot that they existed that long. I mean, I can remember in the late 70s, early 80s, the
where'd you get one
the
on
the Pacer
internet?
And the Gremlin and but
in 1988, where do you buy one?
No, they still had dealerships.
Really?
Yeah, they were still selling Matadors and but they said that their biggest year was 74 when they sold 431,000 cars. Most of them were Ramblers. That's kind of weird.
Gosh, that's right. They owned Rambler.
Yeah.
I forgot they owned Rambler.
So
on all, even on my 60s Ramblers, it says AMC, and we have I think a 61 or 62 Rambler, and technically it's an AMC. It wasn't a Rambler yet.
Well, AMC, Rambler was a model. Rambler was the model.
Right.
Yeah, and now you had one. You got one.
It was called something else. Yeah.
You had one that you talked some old lady out of to give to you, right?
I have had several hand-me-downs of Ramblers, yes.
I thought so.
I haven't had to talk anybody out of them. I've had to say no more than yes.
Have you had a push-button transmission?
Yes. Our 61 is a two-door coupe, and it's kind of a taupe color, and it has the push-button transmission,
And what is the number one rule when you have a push-button transmission?
I don't know. It's still running, so whatever it is, I must have got lucky.
The number one rule is you do not press any of the buttons when the car's not running.
Really?
Oh, interesting.
My dad had a car, had one, a Rambler with a push-button transmission, and he said when he picked it up at the dealership, they said the only thing is don't push any of the buttons until the car's running. And he said that he owned it a week, and my brother, who was, went up and went click, 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 pushed all the buttons, and he said he got in, and the car wouldn't move. And I guess it was something about it just locked up the transmission because things were mechanical back then. They weren't electronic. And so by pushing it, it engaged every one of the rams, I guess, that because you know how a transmission works is it's fluid dynamics. So the pin goes in, and it pushes the fluid to a different area. Well, it closed every single one of them, and the car wouldn't move. It was just locked up, and he had to have it towed to the dealership. They had to pull the transmission, and he said he went home, beat my brother, and, you know, I mean, that was the last time ever.
So, now your brother will never push a button. He's afraid of all buttons.
He's never been on an elevator.
Yeah. He's like, which floor, sir? You push it for me.
That's what he does. He stands next to it waiting for somebody else to walk up, and are you going up? Well, no, I was going to go down. Oh, sorry, I'm going up. So, all right, I think where can they find us online, man?
You guys can check us out at shiftandsteer.com, and all of our social media is at shiftsteermedia as well. And there's a new podcast from our friends over at Podcast One. This is Real GM Radio with Danny LaRue. If you like this podcast, you should check them out. Check out Real GM Radio. Danny LaRue, the basketball expert, sports writer, and podcaster, has his own show on Podcast One Sportsnet where he breaks down all things NBA with some of the NBA's best thought leaders for in-depth conversation, breaking down the NBA playoffs. Check out Real GM Radio every Thursday on Podcast One Sportsnet and Apple Podcasts.
Dude, I can't wait. A show all about General Motors. That's going to be so cool.
That's what I thought when I read that.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
You know what I forgot to talk about?
Win Brad stuff.
All right, everybody. We haven't done it for a couple weeks. So I dug around, found something cool, and I am giving away my Chevelle. That's right. I'm giving away my Chevelle.
It's about time.
I know. No, it's... what are you laughing about? I'm serious. I'm giving away my 1970 Chevelle. It has 19 and 20 inch Bond Speed Huntington wheels, and it's full pro touring car. It's got a roll cage in it, racing seats, and so if you want to see what it looks like, you're going to have to go to our Instagram page and check out my 70 Chevelle that I'm giving away, and you will dig it because somebody's going to win this, and tax and license is on you, though.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Is it? Oh, I can't give away the joke. Okay.
Is it what?
Is there a joke? We don't do that.
It's not my privilege to give away the joke. Okay, I get this now.
Well, no, go ahead, Aaron. What? What do you think? Are you thinking that it's maybe some die-cast Hot Wheel collectible or something?
You could literally hear Brad shuffling around with the box in the background.
Okay, so it's a limited edition Hot Wheels collectible. I think it's from like 2006. We licensed the Bond Speed brand and our wheels to Hot Wheels, and they did a series of cars, and they're cool. I don't even know what scale this is. Do you have any idea, Matt?
No.
Because they're not as small as a regular Hot Wheel, but they're not. I mean, this. How long is that? About 5 inches long? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, four inches.
You're always saying it's longer than it is. So it's,
yeah, this is from 2007.
Okay, 2007. And so anyways, it's really cool. These were very limited edition. They've got the Bond Speed logo on them, and it's a really cool car with our Huntington wheels. So that's going to be, and then I'm going to have another one for you, a different one coming up in the following week. So watch Instagram, see a picture of it, and you too could own a Bond Speed wheeled Chevelle.
That's pretty cool, Brad.
It's cool. They're cool things, and I was lucky because I had a case of them. So, hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shift and Steer. And, Aaron, where can they find you online?
They can find me under anything Aaron Hagar, Rat Runner's Garage. I'm all over the place. So,
Matt?
Yeah, you can follow me on all the social media at Motorator.
And you can find me on social media at Brad Fanshaw, except for Instagram, where I'm Bond Speed Brad. And everybody, check out our website. If you haven't been there in a while, you know, when we go to events, we post photo galleries. So go there, listen to the show, and you can go to the gallery section and check out photos. And it's all at shiftandsteer.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.